Hey, it's Conrad Thompson, and you're listening to 83weeks.com, and we are live on a Tuesday night, right after episode 3 of Who Killed WCW. I'm joined, of course, with Eric Bischoff, who had a chance to see it. Eric, this was a crazy episode. Lots of gaga about Vince Russo. I was looking forward to this episode. I felt like we got some new information in this one. What's your knee-jerk reaction to episode 3?
I'll be interested to hear what new information you picked up on. I saw some nuanced stuff that I found very interesting, like all of a sudden Brad Seahook got amnesia when he was asked a question about his role in bringing me back and what my deal was and who is in charge of who. That got very sketchy all of a sudden, whereas in the previous couple of episodes, Brad had a really good memory until he was put on the spot. I thought that was really interesting. I found, you know, a new piece of information I did not know, absolutely did not know. Actually, Vince Russo had a role in getting me fired. I thought that was really interesting. I'd love to hear more about that because the two things didn't have anything to do with each other, but in Russo's delusional mind, and I think we all get a good glimpse into just how delusional Vince Russo is. Was and probably still is, but yeah, those are my takeaways.
I was kind of shocked to see that he really thought and almost insisted that Goldberg tried to hurt him on purpose. That was new information to me. I don't remember ever hearing that he thought he was being hurt deliberately. What'd you make of that?
It's Russo. And it's one of the reasons why. And you know, I know early on when you and I first started working together. You know, you asked me, would you ever do anything with Russo if the money was right? And I probably said no. I just don't want to share a stage with the guy. I don't want to lend any credibility to someone who I think is the most dishonorable person I've ever worked with in a wrestling business. And by the way, that's a big motherfucking statement right there.
I was sort of sad at the ending, you know, where he said, you know, seeing that footage reminded him how much he hated the business, because even today in 2024, like, he's talking about wrestling every day online. And I just hate that maybe he feels like he has to talk about it, but if you hate it, just put it in the rearview mirror. I mean, Tony Schiavone did that for 20 some odd years, and for him to, I don't know, I felt very conflicted and I don't know, just kind of sad for Vince Russo. What'd you make of him saying watching it back reminded him how much he hated the business?
I'm sure. Well, you know, I don't want to read too much into it. You know, it would be easy for me if I didn't know just how delusional and dishonest Vince Russo can be. I could say, but you know what? I can't blame him because that probably was a really horrible time for him, and he probably had a lot of issues. He began having those issues in WWE, which is why he broke down at Vince's office and started crying and ended up leaving and maybe he had a good reason to leave. But believe me, I spent 4 months working for Vince McMahon, and I can understand how anybody would lose their shit, especially if, you know, you're the head writer. That would be just a horrible position for any human being to be in. So it would be easy for me to go, you know what? Well, I don't blame him. It represented a horrible time in his life. He probably did hate it. He probably looks back and resents it or wish it wouldn't have happened. But I can't do that because he is so freaking delusional on so many different levels. And it became so apparent, at least to me, because I know him and I know the real story, that I just don't have any empathy for him. He's just you know, there's people that lie and they know they're lying and they're manipulating and they're conniving and they're trying to get something from someone. And those people are pretty obvious. Sometimes they're really, really good, and they're not obvious until it's too late. But then there are other people, like I think Vince Russo, who are so caught up in their lives, like he having something to do with me getting fired, is one really small but so obvious example of his need to be important, his need to have had impact. And Vince Russo, for a brief moment in WCW, was the man. He certainly wasn't the man in WWE. We all know who that was. I think there's ever been any question or doubt about that. But Vince feels this need to be like at the center of so much that his need to make himself feel important and sound important kind of override anything else. And he believes his own bullshit as a result. His need to feel important compels him to believe his own bullshit. I've heard of people like that. I've never actually met one, and until Vince Russo, never had to work with one. It's a bizarre situation. Yeah, Tony Schiavone went, you know, he called baseball. Got a job working for the Braves. Russo, if you hate it so much, go get a fucking job, dude. Have you had a job since you left TNA? Find passion. Volunteer. Volunteer your time at a children's hospital or St. Jude or something. Do something to make you happy if you hate talking about wrestling so much.
Of course, the name of the series is Who Killed WCW. A lot of people felt like episode 2 was maybe trying to point the finger at Eric Bischoff. Certainly felt like maybe we were pointing it at Vince Russo here. So we threw up a poll here live on YouTube at 83weeks.com. And we asked after the episode, do you blame Russo more? And the other options are, do you blame Russo the same? Do you blame Russo less? Or is Russo innocent? Russo is innocent, got 7% of the vote. Russo deserves less blame, got 6%. I blame Russo the same percent, got 33%. And I blame Russo more, an overwhelming 53%. So lots of folks are saying, boy, he helped kill WCW. And I like Vince personally. I haven't had the same experience that you have with him. I never had to work with him, but just as a guy who, you know, we've had several conversations on the phone, I find him to be an easy guy to talk to. He's charming and I enjoy our conversations. However, I will say that maybe at my peak WCW fandom, the style of presentation was much different than the style of wrestling that he presented in WCW. I enjoyed Russo's WCW much less than I did the 96, the 97, the 98, and for the most part, the 99 of WCW. And I think most people would agree with that, but I'm sure they're going to break that down a little more in episode 4. Want to give a quick shout out to Robert L. Alzar. He has joined us here as a new member at 83weeks.com. Welcome to the club. We are glad to have you here. Want to also acknowledge Catherine Summers. How about that? Thanks for joining us here as a new member at 83weeks.com. Want to show a little love to John Thompson III, who became a new member. Adam Hutchins is a new member as well. And this is your chance to ask Eric questions. So if you've got questions, keep those coming. Let's get right into it. Philip wants to know, if Thunder doesn't happen, does WCW stay around for at least a few years longer than what it did? Do you think Thunder maybe accelerated the exit of WCW?
Without question. It's not even debatable. I think one of the takeaways from this series so far is that, I think we stated it, somebody stated it right in the very beginning, there's no one thing that killed WCW. I think I said it was death by a thousand cuts. But I think we're seeing that it wasn't the finger poke of doom. It wasn't any one thing. It was a series of things. And all of them had a very negative impact. And it started with Thunder. It started with Thunder, and almost at the same time that Thunder is a thing, we're now getting, and I don't even want to talk about this much more, this reference, but we're getting our budgets in the middle of the year completely reconfigured so that a lot of our profits, a lot of our revenues are being distributed to other divisions in intercompany allocations. Getting your budget crushed. Oh, by the way, you're paying for the new primetime show that Ted wants on TBS because nobody else can or will. So you are. All of those things, and then all of the other changes that were taking place as a result of the merger, just compounded and compounded. It's like compounding interest, only instead of your money growing, this is a problem growing and dysfunction growing. And it went downhill. It wasn't just one thing. And I'm gonna say one thing that is at least a little kinder to Vince Russo than I've said so far. If Vince Russo would have never stepped foot into WCW, it would not have mattered. WCW was going to go away, regardless of what Eric Bischoff did, regardless of what Vince Russo was capable of doing. It was going. And if people can't see that, you know, the first episode we heard from Dick Cheatham, the second episode we heard from Dick Cheatham, those are boring little facts that don't have a lot of drama. Those facts didn't play themselves out for the audience to judge, like a wrestling match, for example, the finger poke of doom. These were things that were happening behind the scenes that Dave Meltzer didn't know about, that 90% of the talent didn't know about. They're being presented in this series, but they're being presented subtly. And we are focusing on the bigger beats, particularly the things that played out in front of an audience, because it's bigger. It's more spectacular. It's more fun to go back and watch. It's more interesting. It's action. But if you look at a lot of the things that Dick Cheatham was saying, some of the things that I've been saying for 6 years working with you on the podcast, hearing from some of the other people involved. And then, of course, you've got Guy Evans' book that was thoroughly researched, 120 interviews with key executives, unlike Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer's bullshit. This is all facts from people that were involved. And if you read that book of Guy Evans, if you're watching this thing carefully and you're open-minded to the idea that it wasn't just one thing, it was a lot of things. And a lot of those things are being pointed out very well here, but some of the most important issues are being played out in the most subtle fashion so far in this series.
I think a lot of people probably learned tonight that the hypothetical what if David Arquette won the world title was a Tony Schiavone idea. We want to hear from you guys. What did you learn, if anything, tonight during episode 3 of Who Killed WCW? Rich Tarrant, who joined us here as a new member, says, if I had a shot for every time I heard the word bro, I would be in the ER getting my stomach pumped out. And he did have another question. He wants to know, who would win in a match between Meltzer and Russo on a Viagra in a pole match with Judy Bagwell as the special guest referee? Boy, that's just not going to be your day right there, is it? I mean, I know you like Viagra and you like Judy Bagwell, but Russo and Meltzer, maybe not your favorite match. You could
put no, I think I'd love to see that. That'd just be some. It'd be so ugly. It'd be fun. It'd be like, you know, it'd be like going to a demolition derby. It'd just be that messy. It'd be fun to watch.
Catherine Summers.
But by the way, we did learn that Vince Russo was more talented on camera than 80% of the WCW roster.
Yeah.
Did you hear that?
That was a regrettable line.
And when people say, well, why do you think he's delusional?
Well,
I rest my freaking case, people.
Catherine Summers is with us, and she says, what did you think of Russo throwing Tony Schiavone under the bus? Throwing you under the bus was what he always did, but damn, he made Tony Khan look good tonight, and Tony Khan sucks. I don't know about that, but I mean, folks are pretty polarizing on Russo, and I'm curious, you know, do you think there is an opportunity at any point in the future to have some sort of a discussion with you and Russo? I mean, not in person, not on stage, not at a Starcast, but in a live YouTube like this, because I know with what you said today, tomorrow morning, Russo is going to start tweeting and he's going to broadcast later in the day and he's going to throw out a challenge. So let me just jump in ahead of time. If he wants that to happen, would you be willing to invite him on your platform to have a conversation, or is it a non-starter from now on?
Non-starter. I don't trust him. He's a liar. He's delusional. He may believe his own lies. That doesn't mean they're not lies. He's a flat-out liar, and he doesn't even know he's lying. He's that's how delusional he is. And there's nothing that Vince is going to say that's going to enlighten me or open my eyes to anything. There's nothing that he's going to say that's going to make me believe him more. There's nothing that he's going to say that's going to make me second guess my opinion of him in any way, shape, or form. I've got a lot of experience with this guy. I've got a ton of experience. I know him really, really well. It is what it is. You know, it's still funny. I was thinking, because I didn't know what today was going to be. I didn't know what tonight's show was going to look like. I had a fairly good idea just because you could kind of see the pattern that they've been following since episode one. I knew this was going to be the Russo episode. And, you know, we saw the teases last week. It was pretty obvious to everybody. And one of my thoughts was, well, great. What are we going to hear that we haven't heard before? Because that's been my biggest concern about this series. And they've done a great job bringing in fresh interviews, fresh perspectives. They've done a great job. But I was particularly concerned about this episode because I've heard all Russo's bullshit 1,000 times. Now, the one thing that I would like to know, because it really wasn't covered here tonight, it really wasn't covered at the last Dark Side of the Ring Bash of the Beach analysis. But here's what I know as a fact. Here's the one thing. If Vince Russo would admit to what I'm about to say, I'd be happy to have a conversation. But at Bash of the Beach, one of two things happened. There's no third thing. It's either A or it's B. Either A, Vince Russo, Hulk Hogan, Eric Bischoff, and Brad Siegel convened in a motorhome in a make-do production meeting to resolve what was going to happen that day. And in that conference call, on that conference call, it was agreed that we were going to go with the Hulk Hogan-Eric Bischoff plan, which was Hulk Hogan was going to get disgusted at Vince Russo's tactics, grab the belt, leave the building, only to show up at Halloween Havoc and claim his rightful place on the throne and force a match with a heel. That was the plan. That's what was agreed to in that trailer. That's why Hulk and I left the building. Contrast this to what you heard tonight from Vince Russo. Hulk and I left the building. Yeah, we left the building because at the time we got in the limo to leave that building, everything had been going according to plan. Hulk Hogan and I were on a plane flying from Daytona Beach to Tampa. It's about a 17-minute flight, right? We get in the plane, cell phones weren't working. As soon as we get down close to touching down, our phones start going off like crazy. And we were informed that Vince Russo went into business for himself. And we had absolutely no knowledge or involvement in discussing what Vince Russo did and said about the Hulk Hogan character. My feeling is one of two things. Either A, Vince Russo went into business for himself and is lying through his teeth to this day because he actually believes his own bullshit. Or B, and I'm leaving the door open for this one, or that conversation took place in that motorhome with Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan and Vince Russo and Brad Siegel. And I would be curious to find out if there was another conversation separate and apart from Hulk and myself, where Russo and Brad decided to go with Russo's plan. It's one or the other. There's nothing in the middle. Either Vince went into business for himself and did exactly the opposite of what Hulk and I wanted to do and what Brad Siegel approved, or Brad Siegel approved what Hulk and I wanted to do and then backdoored another option with Russo after we were done with that meeting. It's one or the other. Which is it, Russo? If you've got the balls to answer that and answer it honestly, we'll talk. If you don't, and I'm going to listen to your fucking ramble and try to bro your way out of this bullshit and turn on the fucking charm and spew the same garbage you've been spewing on this topic, I got no time. There's nothing new. Why would I spend any time listening to the garbage I've been listening to out of this guy for 20 some odd years? I'd rather chew off my fucking finger. No, thank you.
Well, don't do that just yet. Jax82 says Vince Russo came off worse on this show. He always made excuses and points the finger at everybody else, but himself, no accountability. We got lots of questions about Russo here. Dustin wants to know, who had the biggest negative net impact on the business, Russo or Meltzer?
Meltzer. I mean, Russo didn't, like I said, Russo, it was a speed bump. It was bad. I mean, the creative was horrible. I mean, you saw it tonight. I mean, the creative was fucking horrible, and Russo couldn't hang on to, but the ratings went up, bro, for 3 months, bro. The ratings, dude, they were fucking incremental at best. It was probably more of a seasonal adjustment than it was anything else. It didn't, the ratings didn't come up. The show sucked. It was worse than it was, and it was bad before Russo got there. He just made it worse. But at the end of the day, it wouldn't have mattered. WCW would have still been off of Turner one way or the other. He didn't kill WCW. He beat the shit out of it while he was there, but he didn't kill it.
I thought it was interesting that Brad Siegel said, you know, he was responsible for a lot of things for Turner. WCW was one of those, and WCW was the thing he enjoyed the least. So he was anxious to give it to Bill Bush. And later we would even hear him say, you know, yes, the ratings may have come up a little bit, but at the expense of the advertisers, because it was no longer advertiser friendly. So as a reminder, yes, the ratings are important, but why are they important? Because we hope that means you can charge more for the advertising. But if the content of the program means that there are going to be fewer advertisers interested, well, here we go. Aunt Evans is helping us run some polls here, and we asked, was Vinnie Roux more talented than 82% of the roster? And no, got 18%. Fuck no, got 40%. And I got 41%. I think everyone agrees that maybe that was a bit of an exaggeration. We got lots of comments here from like Plot Twist, who says Booker T deserved the belt. I think we all agree with that. Shout out to John Thompson for donating to the cause. We saw another question here from JimCon 1479, who wants to know who was in charge of writing up those Turner contracts and who came up with the amount they got paid. Obviously, we know that was a negotiation process, but would you have been the guy, you know, when you were running WCW, did you sit down and work through a budget and allocate, you know, this is what I can afford for that guy? Or did you have other people on your team do that?
No, I did. Well, I was very much involved in that. I mean, budgeting, especially for talent, was, I would say probably 40% of our expenses were talent. So I had to be very involved in that. But the process was, we, you know, we'd sit down in probably starting in July, let's say, I'll pick a year, 96. So in July of 96, we would begin working on our budgets and our forecasts for 1997, right? So we had about 6 months is generally how long, I think, it was 4 to 6 months is how long the whole budgeting process took. We would figure out based on what we did the previous year and what our current projections were during the current year, we would project our business for the following year. And then we would make the case for, we'd move budget numbers around. If we felt like we needed 10% more in terms of talent budget because we felt we needed to add talent, then we'd try to find that 10% somewhere else and move it over to talent. If we needed additional funding and could justify getting more money to work with at the beginning of the year, we would go in and we would present that case and we would present to Turner Finance, here's why we need additional budget, here's how we're going to use that additional budget, and here's the return we expect to get on that. That was the process. With talent, with travel, with arena fees, with marketing, with licensing, every division of the company had a budget. And I was involved in all of it in terms of getting it approved and establishing it. Once a budget was established, for example, Mike Weber in the pay-per-view division would be in charge of his budget as long as he stayed within his budget, because he had to submit one as well. Every department head did, every VP did, every director did, had to submit their budget for the upcoming year, had to get that approved by me, and then it was submitted to Turner Finance. But once the bell rang and we're into our new budget year, then the VPs and the directors were responsible for living within that budget. Did that answer the question, or did I just tell you way too much shit?
No, we like when we ask what time it is and you tell us how to make a watch. That's what we're doing here at 83weeks.com. It is your home for all things Eric Bischoff. So if you haven't already, hit the subscribe button, turn on the notifications bell, and become a member. We're getting bonus stuff all the time, including, you know, recently heard from Dave Pinzer, and, you know, he's got a whole take on the whole Booker T thing, and maybe a story that not everybody has heard. So I can't wait for us to have Dave join us here live at 83weeks.com. Be sure to check out his new book, Sitting Ringside. BB wants to know, were there ever plans to put Booker T in the main title picture or to win the title? Russo made it seem like it was his big idea. I'm sure having the historic moment had to have been discussed prior. I mean, set the record straight on that. Was that a Russo idea, or did you know at the end of the night it was going to be Booker T?
No, it was not part of the plan. It was Russo. And, you know, one thing I do want to point out, you know, because Vince Russo made it sound, and I think Booker T did, or probably the editing helped make it sound this way, but everybody seems to have forgotten that Ron Simmons was a world heavyweight champion in WCW. It's not like Booker T was the first black champion in WCW with regard to being historic or not. It was still important, and Booker T absolutely deserved it, and it was a great move. It would have been a better move under different circumstances and at a different time, because WCW was in such a bad position at that point. It didn't benefit Booker really the way it could have and should have. But no, that was part of Russo's own agenda that had nothing to do with ours. Ours meaning Ryan Hogan's.
Were you disappointed? I mean, I thought it made sense when Booker said he didn't think he'd ever win the world title because he was black. And I know what you're saying about Ron Simmons. I mean, that happened like 8 years prior to that. But respectfully, when they put the belt on Ron Simmons, it didn't exactly do a lot for business. And I don't necessarily blame Ron for that. WCW.
No, it had nothing to do with Ron Simmons.
I'm just saying, and this is also worth mentioning. It's not like there were a ton of black wrestlers in WCW at the time. We've learned and we've gotten better. The representation matters. And I mean, now the AEW world champion is an African American. And I don't think you and I are probably qualified to speak on African American matters, but what did you think when you heard Booker T say, yeah, I didn't think I'd get to be champion because I was black?
I almost said I can relate. What I meant, and that would have been stupid, but I understand. I think I understand. I can't possibly understand 100% because I'm not black, but I think that was an honest comment. I think Booker T probably grew up thinking a lot about things that wouldn't be available to him because he was black. I think a lot of black kids grow up thinking that. You know, Booker T didn't grow up in the greatest part of the country. He grew up tough. He grew up in a stressful, tough environment. So I'm sure a lot of kids growing up with Booker felt the exact same way. And I believe that probably carries it. You probably carry that through with you into your adult life, into your job situation. So I wasn't offended at all. Not offended isn't the word. I wasn't taken aback or disturbed or disappointed that he said it. What I was a little concerned about is the way Russo came across, making it sound like it had never happened before, which kind of implies that WCW was racist and Vince Russo was there to save the day. You can say what you want about WCW, but at least during my time there, I don't think anybody can accuse WCW of being racist. You know, a lot of people might disagree. There were talent that felt that they weren't getting the opportunities that they could have and should have gotten. We certainly got sued a number of times.
I was going to say, I think there was a lawsuit that was.
Oh started. No, there was, but just because someone sues you for something doesn't mean it's right. And
right.
There was a lot of that going on. But look, Booker T came in under Bill Watts. Survived the Bill Watts era, survived the Kip Fry era, continued to grow, continued to prosper, continued to get bigger and better opportunities. I certainly didn't try to hold Booker T back while I was there. Kevin Sullivan didn't try to hold Booker T back while he was booking. And Russo did make him the champion, to Russo's credit. It's just too bad it didn't happen under different circumstances.
I know it never made air, but I just want to remind everybody that when Booker T and his brother debuted as a tag team, they had them in chains. So I could see how he felt a certain type of way about WCW, but to your point, that was prior to Eric Bischoff being in the big seat. So let's be careful how we throw that around with regards to your regime. Superman Trick Shots says, hello, Eric, fellow ham here, KC8DKV. The rise and fall of ECW was a big reason we got One Night Stand with the popularity of this series. Do you see WCW doing something, or I'm sorry, WWE doing something WCW related? That's probably hard in 2024, isn't it, Eric?
Maybe.
All right, that pregnant pause means we're going to move on. Thank you, Superman Trick Shots. We got a question here from Instagram, a wrestling historian, who says, why did you make yourself the Hummer driver in that storyline almost a year later? Thanks in advance.
Fuck, I don't even know. Maybe because people kept driving me crazy about it, and I thought, okay, the only way I'm going to shut these people up is to admit that I was the driver, come up with some bullshit excuse as to why. Maybe that's what I did. I don't know.
Shout out to Derek, who says, I've been a big fan of 83 Weeks from the start. I've trained for two marathons listening to you. Vince Russo talks a lot about the past for someone who can't stand the business. We got variations of the same question here from John Thompson. He says, would WCW have succeeded if Russo would have been a part of the committee insisted by Brad Siegel? And he follows up with, if WCW decided to bring Paul Heyman in, could WCW have survived with the two of you in charge? I mean, I think you've said it a few times here, Eric, but whether it was Paul Heyman or it was, you know, Greg Gagne or it was Greg Gagne or committee or whatever it was, like the end of WCW was inevitable, right?
Absolutely. I am more convinced of that today than I've ever been.
David says, if Russo was doing so well, why hire Eric back? I think most people agree with that. John wants to know, could you and Russo hug out your differences like Brett and Sean did? I think you made that pretty clear. You laid it out that if he's willing to be honest about what happened at the Bash at the Beach, you would consider doing a Zoom. But without that, it probably doesn't make much sense, right?
No, there's no reason. Just to listen to his bullshit and listen to him say bro 300 times. I mean, his fucking speech pattern drives me up a wall.
And the way he delivers the message is the same.
Oh my God. It's so hard to listen to. So when I say no, I don't even want to talk to him. It's just the idea of sitting and listening to him, unless there's a really good reason to do it, there's a million things I'd rather do, and some of them involve pain.
Cosmic Chris says, WCW for life, Nitro era forever. Man, I know that's right. BB wants to know, as someone who works in marketing, I wondered how Eric would rate the marketing of WCW over the years. Could that have led for the downfall? That's an interesting question. You know, we've seen stories like from ECW where it looked like they had almost no network support at TNN. Do you think that the WCW marketing could have been stepped up? Would it have made a difference?
No, absolutely not. Why? If executives wanted those time slots for other types of programming, why would anybody think that marketing would make a difference? It just wouldn't have. And I will say this, Brad Siegel did a very good job of promoting Nitro. Brad did not want wrestling on his network. Ted Turner forced it. But once Ted said, you're going to do this, Brad, in fact, Ted's own words, because when I was sitting in a meeting right before I left, and I think it was Scott Sassa asked Ted right before I left. He looked at Ted. He goes, Ted, you know, Brad's out of town. What should we tell him when he gets back? And Ted said something very close to, oh, don't worry about Brad. He's a smart guy. He'll know what to do. Meaning he's just going to go with the program. He didn't get the vote. He wasn't even in the room. So once Brad figured out what Ted was doing, whenever that happened, but perhaps Brad knew before the meeting. Brad might have had a heads up. I don't know. All I know is he wasn't in the meeting. But once once the decision was made, Brad supported WCW 100%. He, out of his budget, he funded research. He made sure that the set, he contributed to the budget for the set. He contributed to the budget for the open. He was very supportive. So, and Nitro got so hot, we didn't even need marketing. There was a point in time in 96, 97, and 98 when Nitro was so hot that spending money on marketing would have been a waste of money. Anybody that was interested in wrestling at all knew what Nitro was about. That's how hot we were. We crossed over into pop culture in so many different ways. So it wasn't a marketing issue at all. It was corporate support.
We got a lot of questions like this from Dylan. When are we getting a boxing match between you, Russo, and Cornette? Would you ever entertain the idea of a celebrity boxing thing with Russo?
No. I mean, look, I like to think that I'm capable of certain things, but I'm also smart enough to know that I'm, like Russo, I'm probably kidding myself. Nobody wants to see a 69-year-old man up in the ring throwing punches. Nobody. Especially me. I don't have to go back and watch it. It would be horrible.
I guess I can cancel my renewal for GoDaddy's Eric Bischoff's lastmatch.com.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to work.
DJ Noel says, Eric, I wish they sold you WCW. They stabbed you in the back. David McKenzie says, Vince is going to block Conrad on X again. John Thompson says, big fan of 83 weeks. Both you and Conrad are highly entertaining. Well, thank you, John. We appreciate that. Carl Hayes wants to know, do you think we could get this type of show about another wrestling story? And I guess Conrad from Huntsville wants to know, what would the follow-up be? Like, if, you know, the Evan and Jason and the guys at $7, you know, Brian and everybody else, if they were to put together another series like this, like we've seen Dark Side of the Ring, we've seen Tales from the Territories, and now we've seen Who Killed WCW. Is there another story that deserves a deep dive, like the Tales from the Territories or Who Killed WCW?
Yeah, I'm sure there are. Right now, as we sit here, as we speak, somewhere in this universe is an idea that's floating around, and it's just circling the globe, waiting for the right opportunity and the right time to land. And when it does, maybe it's the Dark Side of the Ring guys that'll bring it to life. But I'm sure there's another great story out there. You're only limited by your own lack of imagination. There's a million stories to be told. And there's probably a couple of really good ones about WCW that have yet to be told. We'll see. Maybe.
Wesley suggests that perhaps the new series could be, how is TNA still alive? You know, you want to talk about a company that's got nine lives. Maybe that's it. John Thompson says, if you had to choose for someone to replace you in creative, would you have chosen Jim Cornette, Vern Gagne, Bruce Pritchard, John Laurinaitis, or Jim Ross? Someone's going to take your seat on a committee in creative. Who would you hand the reins to? Cornette, Gagne, Bruce?
I would say Bruce. I've never worked with Cornette. I listen to him. I don't listen to him all the time, but I do listen to him. I'll drop in every once in a while. There's things I disagree with Cornette about, just philosophically and in terms of approach to the business. But there's a lot of things I actually agree with him on. I mean, he's a smart guy and he's entertaining as fuck. He's funny, but he is smart too. I've just never worked with him. And I know that, you know, Jim had Smoky Mountain Wrestling, but that's not the same as producing a national television show. It's different. And because I never worked with Cornette and I have worked with Bruce, I would go with Bruce for sure. Absolutely with Bruce.
We asked you guys right here at 83weeks.com, should we have Russo on 83 Weeks Live? And the options were, yes, let's troll Eric on his own show. And that got 15% of the vote. No, we've heard enough from Vinny Roo. And that got 15% of the vote. No, he bro Eric to death got 21%. And yes, it would be fun, got 50%. But I know when it's time to stop selling. Hey, do you want a silly question or a fun question next, Eric? Because I've got one of each.
Oh, well, let's go silly first.
Buddy, this is as silly as it gets. I can't believe this is a real question, but Ravishing Tony, Ravishing Rony paid $10 to ask it. So here we go. When was the last time you took a dump, and what was the consistency and volume of the fecal matter? Keep up the great work.
What the hell?
I don't know. El Flaco wants to know, why did Brad Siegel never clarify who was in charge between Russo and Bischoff? If he did,
because that means that Brad would have to take some responsibility and come clean, and he doesn't want to do it on national television. That's just my guess.
So, you know, Russo was implying he was not supposed to be my boss, bro. What was the deal you made with Brad? I know it's supposed to be that you only answer to him. You made that pretty clear. But does that just by design mean that Russo is beneath you on the org chart?
Here was the structure as it was laid out to me by Brad. First of all, keep in mind, I had just been fired months before. Not fired. Actually, they didn't fire me. They exercised legally what was in my contract. It's called pay or play. Once a pay or play provision is exercised, and what that means, in case, you know, not everybody deals with contracts like this, a pay or play provision means that the company can take me out of my position, but they have to keep paying me for the term of the contract. So I'm sitting home and I'm getting paid, pay or play. They decided not to play me, just to pay me. That's their prerogative, legally. When they wanted me to come back, when Brad called me 60 days later, no, maybe 90, whatever. I don't know when Russo started, October maybe.
Yeah, that's right.
Of 99, so October, November, December, January. 90 days after I was let go. And keep in mind, legally, the gimmick attorney could confirm this. But once they exercise, they meaning Turner, exercise the pay or play provision, they can't unexercise it. They can't force me to come back to work. All they can do is pay me. The only way they can get me to come back to work is if I agreed to do so. And the way I agreed to do so was for WCW to pay me. I left them a little dignity. I made them pay me 90 cents on a dollar, not 100, not 75 cents, 90 cents on a dollar. And it was a lot of money. It was 2.5 years of my salary at that point. They had to write that check. And then they had to enter into an entirely new agreement for an additional amount of money. And in my case, they gave me two what they call put movie deals. A put deal is it's a commitment to make a movie. I had the opportunity, if I found a movie I wanted to make, and I got the right people attached, it was the right movie, I get to bring it in. I'm the producer, not executive producer, producer, because executive producer is a vanity credit for the most part, or more often than not, I should say. But a producer credit actually has equity in a lot of ways. So they offered me a two-picture deal at TNT or TBS TNT, could have been one or the other, and a whole new contract. So to beg necessarily, but I do want to put into context the millions of dollars this decision cost them. Why would they make a decision that cost them close to $2 million? Damn close. If everything was going so well with Russo. they were forced to bring me. They didn't want to bring me back. And this is where Siegel got really wishy-washy, because he knew he was getting boxed in. And I'm guessing the producers showed Siegel some of my comments and some of my clips. Because Brad was really uncomfortable talking about that. It was apparent to me. I don't know, man. It's interesting, isn't it? Interesting.
Cosmic Chris is here. Eric is too humble. You are a living legend. I agree, Cosmic Chris. Josh Henney is here, and he just gifted 583 weeks with Eric Bischoff memberships.
Oh, Josh.
Thank you so much for all the support, man. John Thompson has another fun question. If you decided to make Laurie Bischoff a television character for WCW, how would you make her a TV character? She's a babyface, right? You think she could cut a heel promo?
Fuck yeah.
You've probably heard a few of those.
Not many, because, man, she did. But when she, I think I've heard her twice, two times in our relationship. I've heard like Snap City. Fucking scary. Yeah. She could be. But it's not her nature. Her nature, she'd have to be a really, really, really good actress to convince anybody she could be a heel character. You'd have to play her close to who she really is. And she's like
Miss Elizabeth.
She's like Stevie Nicks, witchy, cool, like smart, like kind of spooky in a way, smart. I'd have her be some kind of like psychic baby face. That'd be fun. She could predict the future. And then the shit would come true and people would get all whacked out about it. That could be fun.
You know, when you get to be as good friends as Eric and I are, I know that his hall pass is Stevie Nicks, and he just booked her to be Stevie Nicks. Let's shift gears here. We're getting down a slippery slope here. John says...
My fantasy's coming true one way or the other.
Do it now. This will work. John Falsetta says, do five push-ups every time Russo says, bro, you'll be bigger than Scott Steiner. John Thompson says, if Russo was a wrestling character starting out in WCW, how would you have molded him, and would he have been WCW champion? Come on, John. You know he wouldn't have been WCW champion. John, and listen,
what are you drinking, John? Come on now.
We haven't really talked about this, but for all the criticism that the Arquette experiment gets, to me, it's much more egregious to have Vince Russo win the championship. What say you?
Look, I get it. And especially, you know, the way it was presented, the world championship, it's the title, it's, you know, it's sacrilegious. Fuck, he beat me, for crying out loud. It's not like he beat Booker T or Vader or Sting or Luger or DDP or anybody else. He beat me. So I get it. Hardcore wrestling fans are probably, oh my God, it's sacrilege. That title is sacred. It means so much. And it does, and it should. But in the context of what we did with Arquette, it should not have been taken too seriously, since he beat me for the belt. Not a wrestler. Not anybody on the main roster. Like, if that would have happened, I could have seen. Absolutely, 100%. There's no other side of the coin. But honestly, it's like he won the belt on a technicality, not by actually beating somebody. So I get it. I really do understand it intellectually. I think some people have made a bigger deal out of it than they probably should, under the circumstances and within the context of what we did and how we did it.
We should do a few more questions here, but first let's mention that John Thompson says, Russo bro WCW to death. And we got lots of comments like that. Alton wants to know, how come the Millionaires Club wasn't heel and the New Blood good guys? Eric with the Millionaires Club, Russo with the New Blood. I mean, I kind of thought that was the idea, But I could see how someone would say that, you know, there weren't really good guys or bad guys in that. It was shades of gray. Would you categorize the New Blood or the Millionaires? Or, I mean, are one of those sides a heel to you? What do you think now?
I kind of went into it thinking that the Millionaires Club, I mean, everybody, yeah. If you've got two classes of people, you've got the workers and you've got management. I don't know. This is like a story that's been told a couple, 3-4 million times since the 1900s. When you've got, you know, the workers and the management, it's inevitable that the management, the millionaires, the bosses are the heels. Even if they're really not, that's how they come off. That's how they're treated. That's how the workers feel. They feel oppressed. They don't feel like they're getting treated fairly. They're not giving the breaks and opportunities that they feel they deserve. Whether you're working in a steel mill in Pittsburgh or an automobile plant in Dearborn, Michigan, or in Turner Broadcasting at WCW. So I always saw the Millionaire Club as essentially the heels. Now you're going to have consciousness, you know, show up somewhere in the middle there. You're going to have people kind of realizing, oh man, I'm on the wrong side of this thing. That's where your story comes from. The fact that Russo and I were on the same side is setting up where the story could go, because at some point there's going to be a split. At some point we're going to have to circle back and tell a story. It's an opportunity. So I think that idea could, in a different circumstance, under different conditions, the idea of that story was not a bad idea. The execution of it was, but the idea was actually not a bad idea, particularly given the circumstances.
Our great close personal friend of the show, Efren, says, Lori did cut a heel promo with her face when you had your head shaved both times. She never said a word.
Yeah, she can be silent but deadly that way. Her eyes say it all.
Yeah, no more CM Punk bets on 83.
No, fuck no.
David McKenzie says, what about a Vince McMahon podcast or doc? I think we're talking about as a follow-up effort to Who Killed WCW. What could these guys work on next? I would love that, and I think that is a logical suggestion. I don't know if $7 is involved, if they would be interested in doing a Vince McMahon.
No, there's boy, that gets sticky, doesn't it?
It does. So I think that would make it difficult. Bunda713 says, at the Road Wild pay-per-views, the talent used shipping containers as dressing rooms. Why couldn't WCW provide trailers? Did those outdoor shows make money?
We did have trailers. I had like 30 of the motherfuckers. It cost me a fortune. So I don't know where the shipping container story came from, but I can assure you there is a shit ton of trailers that we contracted for.
There'll be a shit ton of new merch coming later this month too, and members get a special discount. Thank you for coming to 83weeks.com, and be sure to hit that subscribe button. Turn on the notifications bell. You never know when we're going to go live. Eric was live last week and he had a special guest. You never know when he's going to go live again, but we will be back here next week after episode 4. And I imagine we'll probably have some follow-up guests and discussions in the following weeks. And here's a great example of the type of thing that could be fun to discuss from DJ Noel. Eric, if WCW won and WWE was sold to WCW, would you be giving the dream matches that fans wanted to see, like Sting versus The Undertaker? Would your invasion storylines have been different?
Well, of course they would have been different, without question. Look, Sting and Taker was something people were talking about back in the 90s, so... Sure, eventually that would have been so obvious we would have had to try to make it work.
We got another comment here from John Thompson. Do you think it's possible for David Arquette to make a comeback to wrestling in AEW? I mean, I could see him on camera. I don't know that he wants to wrestle anymore, but I know you and I both think a lot of David Arquette, and his documentary he did a few years ago showed that he really does love and respect wrestling, but he's probably got it out of his system now. I don't think we're going to see a repeat of him on national television wrestling anymore.
No, the documentary, David described it as a love letter to professional wrestling.
Yes.
And I think it's very appropriate. It was a phenomenal, phenomenal documentary. Really made me appreciate David even more than I did. But I think wrestling came full circle for him. You know, he got excited about getting involved. You heard him tonight because, you know, he was a kid growing up and watching wrestling. You know, he said it with such childlike joy in his eyes tonight when I heard him on the dock. And then he got to step into the ring and he got to experience it. And it wasn't what he thought it would be. And I think he left disappointed because of the way he felt guilty. He didn't feel like he deserved the opportunity he got. I'm sure a lot of people made him feel that way. And he carried that with him for a long time. It bothered him. And you can tell David is a very, very sensitive guy. And it really hurt him that so many people were upset with David for taking advantage of an opportunity that every single person complaining about it would have done themselves if had they had that opportunity. But Dave took it, and he took it and took it, and then he made the decision, you know what? I'm going to go earn my stripes. I'm going to go earn my credibility. And went down and trained in Mexico in some crazy environments, doing crazy shit that a lot of Americans wouldn't go through in order to earn their stripes or to get their credibility. David did it and it followed through. And now I think he's hung up his boots and feels really good about it. And it feels like he at least gave back to the industry by demonstrating how passionate he is about it. So now I don't think he's coming back. He's not getting any younger either. None of us are.
How about this question from Alex D? Conrad, can you please get Eric and Tony Khan on the same page? Like you, I love WCW and I enjoy AEW. It sucks having them be at odds. Do you feel the same? I do. I think that could happen at some point. We got to get you and Tony Khan together because I do think you guys have more in common than you may think. And I know it's gotten ugly in more recent years, but I just think you guys would get along.
Well, I don't just like Tony. I've said that a million times. I'd be happy to sit down and have a steak with Tony and shoot the shit. He's never lied to me. He's never manipulated me. He's never deceived me. He's never done anything dishonest that I'm aware of. So I got nothing but love for the guy. Sure. Sit down anytime.
Well, how about that? Let's end on a positive note. Thank you, boys and girls, for tuning in tonight for our recap of episode 3 of Who Killed WCW on Vice. One episode remains. We will be live next Tuesday night at the conclusion. Be sure to hit the subscribe button, turn on the notifications bell. And if you haven't already, consider becoming a member here at 83weeks.com. It is your home for all things Eric Bischoff. And Eric, I know you and I are going to be putting one in the can for this Friday's episode tomorrow. And as I understand it, we're going to be watching something you've never seen before. Are you looking forward to this? I think tomorrow's going to be a lot of fun, man.
What are we watching?
Oh, well, if you don't know, I won't spoil the surprise. But
this is always fun.
83 Weeks is always here every single Friday. You can find it anywhere you enjoy podcasts. But you know what? Go ahead and hit it right now. Hit the subscribe button. You won't miss a thing. And join us live by turning on that notifications bell. That way, the next time we hit the live button, you won't miss anything. Eric, close us out. Any final words about episode 3 of Who Killed WCW tonight?
No, I'm really looking forward to the final episode. If there's anything really juicy and new, I predict that this is where we're going to see it and hear it. Perhaps maybe even a different angle on who was really responsible. Should be a good one. By the way, John McCardle just gifted 20 83 Weeks memberships. I love you for that, brother. Thank you very much.
So cool. Thank you so much, John. And thank you all. And we hope you have a nice night. We'll see you this Friday right here at 83weeks.com.